right now, technology commentator today, it's Steve McCabe. A very good morning to you.
Good morning, Catherine.
Net neutrality.
Yes.
Too many N's for me.
I apologise for that.
That's all right. What does it mean?
Well, the basic idea behind net neutrality is that the internet's what they call a common carrier. Basically, anything that I want to put on the internet to send to you, or you want to send to me, or to anybody else, is supposed to have equal status. There's supposed to be no priority given to any one particular kind of traffic, whether it's email or web surfing or file transfer, regardless of regardless of the sort of traffic that we're trying to send, The idea is that everything's treated equally, hence the term net neutrality. The companies that provide the infrastructure, whether it's the big cables that go across the countries around the world, or whether it's the companies that provide the cable that come to your door, they're not supposed to really shape traffic depending on what kind of traffic it is, where it's coming from, where it's going, or indeed the perceived legality of that traffic.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Put the legality to one side. What might be their motivations or someone else's to have different priority levels?
Well, there's a couple of different considerations. One of the reasons why this is coming to the forefront right now is recent moves in the United States from their Federal Communications Commission. The FCC have basically issued new regulatory guidelines that effectively have the authority of law that say that companies cannot infringe on net neutrality. And companies were doing this because basically what they didn't want to have happen was people downloading files that would impact on their profits. Being cynical about this, many of those companies in the US, for example, there's a company called Bright House, who are basically a subsidiary of Time Warner. And Time Warner, obviously a very, very large entertainment corporation, they would like to see you buying your content from a source that eventually pays back to Warner Brothers rather than downloading it for free. And so what they're trying to do is throttle file transfer data, making it unattractive for people to download files, shall we say, unofficially, so that then they'll be more incentivized to buy the files from faster downloading sources.
When you say unofficially, does that mean necessarily illegally or not?
Potentially, yes.
Okay.
I'm trying to fudge that one a little bit.
Well, we all know at the moment we've just had the whole debate over Section 92 and
yes,
three strikes are out and all that kind of thing. So we're talking about people who might be getting their movies or other products foul of the law.
Yes, not directly from the official source, let's say. Try and put this as delicately as possible.
Yeah, I am. I'm just trying to think if there's any legitimate way. I suppose if someone slaps up and says, go to my website, you can download my three songs here absolutely free of charge. That is legal, right?
Yes.
But then they would be the very person in charge of the material that you're talking about here.
Precisely.
Okay, so why is this relevant, this change, relevant to us? Is it relevant to us?
Well, I mean, the first consideration is that, let's face it, in cases like this, oftentimes we find that where the US leads, the rest of the world does tend to follow. It's also worth bearing in mind that there's a lot of the internet traffic in the world does at some point get routed through the United States, and a lot of the traffic that comes to New Zealand inevitably comes over trans-Pacific cables. So we are, to a certain extent, beholden to the traffic shaping that goes on in the United States. So it is quite important for us to know that, at the moment at least, traffic shaping, as they're calling it, modifying their data transmission rates depending on exactly what it is you're transmitting, that is going to be relevant to people in New Zealand because we are going to be impacted by that. Plus also, since you mentioned the three strikes and your outlaws that are coming out in New Zealand recently, one of the provisions within the FCC's new rules is that ISPs, internet service providers, do actually have the authority to, they don't have the authority, from putting any kind of restriction on legal internet traffic. But with that language in there, that is actually validating actions that can supposedly at least limit what's perceived as being illegal internet traffic. And so what that could then be seen as doing is validating things like the three strikes and your outlaw, which require ISPs to identify what's perceived as being illegal traffic.
What about the idea that different forms of traffic might have priority, email over some other form? Is there any shift in what remains the sort of tenet of net neutrality on that?
Well, yeah, interestingly, that is actually quite significant within the New Zealand context. The ISP that I use at home, for example, have a very, very generous bandwidth cap, a very generous data allocation every month. But The downside is they say that during certain hours of the day, basically afternoon, early evening, they will give priority to web traffic, because their argument is, if you're surfing the web, you want to see pages loading immediately. You don't want to have to wait for them. Whereas if you're doing a large file transfer, you're not expecting to see it pop up on your screen immediately. And as a result, they will, and they quite cheerfully advertise this on their website, we will prioritize instantly viewed material, i.e. web material, over long-term downloads, file transfers. And so if New Zealand starts to follow the way the United States is going with this policy of net neutrality, suddenly web traffic no longer will have any privileged status compared to file downloads.
And that, what, could end up slowing up access to the web?
Conceivably, yes. What it could mean is that suddenly web traffic no longer gets, let's say, an easier ride. Web traffic is going to have to fight its way along with all the other bits and bytes that are going down the cables without getting any special treatment, and it could conceivably slow down surfing, yes.
Well, it has implications when we're already trying to speed up, obviously, by expanding infrastructure here. At the same time, don't we want to be able to use those other facilities for things like Skyping or teleconferencing and everything else as part of making our business dealings and everything else more efficient?
Most definitely. There is oftentimes an assumption, and it's never really quite explicitly stated, but we all know it's there, that the file transfers are inevitably going to be illegal. That if I'm doing a great big file transfer, it's probably because I'm downloading a Hollywood film that I don't want to have to go and pay a cinema ticket for. There's that assumption being made, and therefore the assumption is then extended to being, well, you don't really quite deserve to get the same preferential treatment. We know what you're doing. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. You can do it, just you're going to have to get in the queue.
Well, I mean, you're a teacher. When you look at what's happening in education and technology and the different ways that kids will be receiving and indeed submitting their schoolwork, do you see implications for that? Are some of those activities and the way the technology is used going to take up a few bites?
You know, quite possibly, yes. Papakurahai, where I teach, has done something which I consider to be particularly enlightened recently. They've actually allowed teachers access to YouTube on classroom computers, because YouTube is a wonderful teaching resource if used carefully. You know, obviously quality control has to be exercised, but the fact that we're allowed to access YouTube to find really, really valuable stuff. I teach physics, and I can find some wonderful demonstrations in video that I can't run in my classroom. It's fantastic for me to be able to put that on a projector and show it to my students. But it does take a lot of data. YouTube is a huge bandwidth hog.
I hope, if you're into astrophysics, that you've got the class listening to yesterday's 10 o'clock feature, by the way.
We don't do astrophysics, unfortunately, at NTA Level 3. We should.
Yeah, they could listen anyway.
Absolutely, I'll work that into my curriculum.
Thank you. Facebook, back in trouble again. And this, cookies I don't even really get, except I don't think I like them and I certainly don't trust them. But Facebook now, even after you've logged out, coming after you.
You know, this one, I have to say, being a little bit cynical here, the gentleman who was on the show on Tuesday, Mark Rottenberg, and I've got to be nice about this, but I do have the sense that he's kind of a bit of a tinfoil hat wearer, to be perfectly honest.
What is one of those?
Oh, this goes back to the old belief that the CIA or whichever nefarious organisation of choice you choose to believe in is trying to read your brainwaves, and if you wear a hat made of tinfoil, then it'll block their...
Now I know. I thought you were just getting your roots done or something, but never mind.
Well, those of you who still have roots might do, yes.
So you're a little dubious about whether he's uncovered the next big Facebook scandal.
No, he's uncovered something, or actually more specifically, an Australian chap by the name of Nick Kubrilovich has uncovered something. And then it's been then taken and turned into a fantastic attention-grabbing headline. Yeah, Facebook is not a benevolent corporation. And I'm not saying that to have a go at Facebook in particular, but I think we forget what exactly Facebook's all about. There is an aphorism that's been doing the rounds of the internet recently that's worth repeating. People are pointing out that if you're not paying for a service, and let's face it, we don't pay for Facebook, if you're not paying for it, you're not the customer, you're the product. And Facebook and Google and plenty of other companies are in the business of gathering data about you, so they can then aggregate that data, they can then use the information they're gathering to sell advertising space.
Whatever happened to, you know, what was the catchphrase? Not first do no harm, but, you know, do no evil.
Do no evil was supposed to be Google.
Do no evil, and we're all this big, free, one, happy family with no barriers and all this kind of stuff. When did all this customer and product thing come in? About day two?
Probably sometime around the time that Google became one of the biggest corporations in Silicon Valley. Yeah,
there you go.
Yes, it's not just power.
So are users naive? And are users naive if they don't think all sorts of info? You'd at least like to think that your info that is being sucked up and tracked off to anyone else stopped when you logged out, didn't you?
Well, that was the understanding, yeah, that as long as you're logged out, then if you're not on a Facebook page, Facebook shouldn't be following you. It's not just Facebook that's implicated in this. The reality is that the only websites that are going to get tracked are Facebook's, are websites whose hosting services are hand-in-hand with Facebook. So, for example, if you go to my website at stephenmccabe.net, Facebook's not going to track that because I don't have any tie to Facebook. You won't find a click here to like us on Facebook or follow us on Facebook links on my website. There is no connection there. As a result, I'm not going to be interfering with the Facebook cookie on your computer. My website won't do anything and Facebook won't know about it.
So who's doing the tracking? Like if you've got see us on Facebook because that's your business, does that mean you're the site that gets tracked, or is it whoever comes to your website that gets tracked?
Well, what's going to happen, think of it in these terms, if you sit down at your computer tonight and you surf to let's say the Radio NZ website, and there's a little link on there that says like us on Facebook, when you click that button, what the computer behind the scenes will basically do is write a little message in a file that the Facebook website is placed on your computer saying, yeah, Catherine came to this site. And then next time you're on Facebook, Facebook will then read that file and say, oh, let's see where she's been recently. Oh, look, she's been on the Radio NZ site. That's how it's going to work.
So it's only if I go to one of those sites that's got a like us on Facebook or we're on Facebook or check out our Facebook page,
yes,
that it's going to happen.
Exactly.
What is a cookie, by the way?
Well, a cookie is a file that resides on your computer somewhere, resides on your hard disk. It's placed there by a website, and the reason for this is for the website to store a little bit of information about you. It can store, for example, a username that you have requested it to record. It can record the last time you went to that site. The idea, the innocent, supposedly non-nefarious idea behind this is it saves you from having to re-input information, or it can remember if you go to an online shopping site that, for example, you are a woman and most likely to want to look at women's clothes rather than men's, for example. That's meant to be the non-nefarious part of it. In reality, people like Google are going to use it to tailor web searches towards your particular interest. Okay. If they find that when you search for a particular thing in the past and you've generally tended to go and look at results that are of a New Zealand context, let's say, then they're going to record that in your cookie. And next time you search, they're going to check that cookie and say, aha, this person's interested in New Zealand-oriented sites. And they're going to try and emphasize those in their search results.
So Facebook is doing this for financial reasons, business reasons, commercial reasons.
They're a business.
And can you do anything about it if you don't like it? Can you get away from it?
Yes, you can. I mean, the most simple answer is if you don't like it, don't use it. Facebook is, after all, a free service. And you can easily give up on it. And we can come back to that point in a second.
Aren't you sort of permanently, once you're signed up, though, aren't you forever there kind of thing? Like even if you get yourself off it?
Yes, it's the Hotel California of the internet.
Exactly.
You can check out, but you can never... Actually, you can leave. I've read accounts of people who've submitted the I wish to leave Facebook form to Facebook, gone back 3 or 4 months later and found that their account was still active. Apparently, Facebook won't finally delete you for 6 months.
Okay, and once it's deleted you, all your history while you were on Facebook is still there, but can it still track your other activities? No.
As far as I'm aware, if you're still on Facebook, if Facebook still know about you, still keep a record of you, and that cookie's still on your computer, if you're visiting those sites, then conceivably those sites could still write to that cookie, yes.
Now, Google Plus.
Ah, yes.
Is it getting anywhere? Is it a plus, a minus, or a...
It's a sort of a myth, really, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it's worth remembering, as we talk about Facebook, that they're not the only social media in town. I mean, I'm sure you'll remember the very first time I came on your show, we talked about how Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google, had fessed up that they reckoned they'd screwed up by not getting in ahead of Facebook. And obviously that simply won't do. Google are now of the opinion that they by rights own the internet. And, you know, they very nearly do, to be fair. But this is a great big niche that they've not yet occupied. And so they brought out Google+. And it got a lot of ballyhoo and a lot of fuss and a lot of attention when it was first announced. It was by invitation only, and there were people begging for invitations. And it was Nat Talkington who sent me mine a while back, and I was very delighted to be on, and then that was it.
Wasn't it old Mark Zuckerberg who ended up with more kind of followers when he joined Google Plus than anyone else?
Oh, is that right? I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure.
If that's true, the irony is delightful.
No. He's got just become a member and he's got more followers than the Google founders, the co-founders.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, so anyway, Google Plus opened up. It started off as being member only. And basically, by making something exclusive, you generate buzz about it. And so they got a lot of people begging to be allowed on. And it kind of started, and people were giving it very positive reviews. And they're saying there's a few features. They've got, like, they're called circles. It's ways of setting up little groups that you can hold conversations with. And they incorporated video chat if you've got a webcam. There were a few nice features to it. But the bottom line was, everyone's already got a social network. They don't need another one.
This is the extraordinary sort of de facto monopoly of the web, isn't it? If you are not necessarily first, but if you're the first big take-up, you just seem to hold this gargantuan kind of control over the thing,
yeah.
whether it's Facebook, whether it was Google itself with the search engines or everything else.
Yeah, we've seen it repeatedly. And you look at, for example, web browsers. To begin with, it was Netscape Navigator. And Microsoft said, hang on a second, we should own this market, and so they came up with Internet Explorer, promptly crushed Netscape. And now it's taken years for anything else to get any kind of foothold in the battle against that. The same thing, again, is true of, say, search engines. It used to be that Yahoo was there, and there was Alta Vista, and there were a few others. Suddenly, everyone Googles. Microsoft tried to get into that with Bing, and that fell very, very, very flat. People, once you get one that's established, it's usually the second big attempt that has seen how the first attempt didn't quite work. The second big attempt then gets the traction, takes over the market, and then that's it. Pretty much it's closed.
So what's happened for Google Plus? Is there any sign of life?
Well, I did see a lovely cartoon on the internet about 4 or 5 days ago. The caption said, "What's happening on Google Plus right now?" And the photograph was a huge expanse of desert with a tumbleweed rolling through it, which I thought was pretty telling. And since we've mentioned Nat Talkington, later of this parish, I had a quick look to see what had been going on my Google Plus page. I logged on for the first time in about 6 weeks last night. And I've got 5 friends compared to about 200 on Facebook, simply because I don't know anyone who's on Google+. And that's exactly the kind of person who you'd expect to see really exploiting this and taking advantage of it. And he's posted twice in the last month.
Hey, that's not a good sign for Google+.
No, it's not. It's not really getting the traction that it needs. And I think basically the reason is that everyone's got enough of what they want from Facebook. They're not getting something sufficiently new from Google Plus.
The other thing with Facebook is, okay, it's got 27 gazillion members, but is its use? I mean, you know how you sort of sign up to these things and then they just sit there empty, as you say, you've used it twice. Do we know if its traffic and its use remains at continued growth, or is it plateauing? I know people are reducing the number of friends they tend to have.
Well, sooner or later, it's going to have to plateau. I mean, there's only 6 billion people in the world, so eventually they're going to reach a point where they can't get any more members.
Yeah, but being signed up's one thing. Using it actively and putting your pickies up and droning on about what you did at school today, forgive my cynicism, you know, is the traffic and the amount of activity still growing?
It seems to be holding fairly steady. From what I can tell, Facebook aren't particularly interested in giving out less flattering information. They're going to tell you how many wonderful people are signing up for the service. They're not going to say, oh yeah, half of those don't ever bother using it. That's not going to make them look good, and so it's not information that they're really keen and motivated to release. So as far as we know, yeah, there's constant sign-ups, it's keep going on, there's this linear trend. I mean, you would think the maths of it ought to suggest an inverse exponential increase. It's not. It seems to be, if what we're hearing is true, a linear increase. It's just steadily keeping on going.
Well, then you need to let your students listen to yesterday's feature astrophysicist, because he's out looking for new planets right now. They're doing a census of potential new planets.
And then we
can assess how likely there's any sort of life form, and that would give Facebook a whole new kind of market.
You have to figure Mark Zuckerberg's probably payrolling that one.
I won't hear that about Ray Jawadana. He's a fascinating man. You go and put the pod on later for the...
I shall do. I shall make sure they get to have a listen.
That's enough advertising from here now. I'm not supposed to do it. Good talking to you, Steve McCabe, new technology commentator.